Chapter 10. The Cleft. The Manufactorum breathed. It was metal and stone, a monstrosity constructed on a framework of brass and iron girders the size of cities that gave shape to the bones of the planet. It was a work built in the materium, of the materium, and yet it breathed. The taint of the warp oozed from every crack in the metal, every pore of stone. The floor beneath Sanguinius's boots heaved up and down with the slow inhale and exhale of lungs. It slithered, too. Footing was treacherous. The metal felt as if it were covered by a thick, viscous slick of ichor. It was not. It was dry. Serpentine tremors moved through it, shifting and pulling, the surface changing from rough to smooth in the space of an instant. The Manufactorum bled. Where bolt shells or demon claws struck the walls, rotting blood ran. The wounds puckered and sucked like hungry mouths. And the Manufactorum sang. The conduits were the pipes of an organ. Whatever moved through them summoned notes of cancerous music. The deeper the blood angels ventured into the forge, the more complex the song became. The mouths of open conduits had teeth, and tongues lapped at their edges. They shaped themselves to the demands of the tune. The tongues vibrated. The octaves of the sick melody plunged so far beneath hearing, the vibrations would have shattered a mortal skeleton. They rose so high, Sanguinius tasted blood. The music was a polyphonic symphony of dark industry and darker intent. It was a hymn to ruin, and a threnody for hope. In the complex nodes that developed, he thought he heard the formation of a whisper. It was at the edge of perception, unwilling to declare itself yet. There were no syllables. It was the hesitation that came before a familiar word was pronounced. Sanguinius was not alone in hearing the whisper. Ralderon spoke to him when First Company and the Sanguinary Guard broke through another horde of the corpulent, plague-bearing abominations.
"Something is speaking here."
"And it wants us to listen," Sanguinius said. "Shut your ears to it. There will only be poison in the words." They were in a hall hundreds of yards wide, and they had a clear run for at least a mile. The space was lit by the conduits. They ran in thick clusters along the walls and the ceiling, 200 feet up. Each was almost as wide as a rhino, and they glowed, lit from within by the burning fusion of warp and matter they carried. They tracked their way down the curving tunnel-like veins, their lines irregular, merging and branching, but always feeding deeper.
"The voices want us to advance," Ralderon said. "They are pulling."
"And we must advance, for our reasons too," Sanguinius said. "There are matters where we have no choice. There are actions we are bound by destiny to take. That does not mean the consequences of the action are preordained." He needed this to be true.
"Please, Father, let it be so."
"The foul song of this place may want us to go deeper. We will. And we will overwhelm the power within. It will rue its desire to lure us in." The tunnel curved sharply, its immensity sighed. A great choir resounded, and the hall opened up into a chamber of even larger dimensions. Filling the centre was a nexus of conduits. They arrived from a score of corridors from multiple levels. They tangled with each other, forming a gigantic knot.
"A nerve cluster!" Sanguinius shouted.
It could be nothing else. The unwholesome light within flashed with maddening intensity, illuminating the chamber with a blinding stutter.
"This monstrousness mimics life, and so makes itself vulnerable. Teach it pain!"
The song of the Manufactorum became a wail, punctuating each flash with the celebration and lamentation of the materium twisted and the impossible made real. Hundreds of the pink-fleshed demons gathered around the base of the nexus, adding their babbling to the chorus. They turned at the sound of the Blood Angel's arrival. The demons sent a wave of warp sorcery ahead of them. The Sanguinary Guard and First Company hurled themselves through it. It washed over armour, boiling ceramite and melting it. The wills contained within were strong, made stronger by the crucible of Cygnus Prime.
The Blood Angels withstood the wrenching attempts of change and blasted the abominations out of existence. They waded through the twitching mess of blue matter that remained and gathered squad by squad around the Nexus. Ralderon joined Sanguinius before the mass of the conduits.
Melter bombs? He asked.
Sanguinius smiled. It seems so mundane a means of destroying the extraordinary, doesn't it?
Yeah, said Ralderon. If the myths of the past are real, it seems they should be banished by rituals, too.
Naturally. Sanguinius was conscious of the feathers of his wings trembling very lightly in response to the vibrations of the Manufactorum's song. He knew more than he cared to about myths. His life had been a constant struggle to avoid becoming one. Only rituals banish nothing. Actions do. He swept an arm, taking in the smashed and burned remains of the demons. They have become material, and so can be destroyed by material means. He examined the Nexus a moment longer. Melter bombs, he agreed, then said it again, voxing the order to the company. Howls came from the other tunnels. They grew louder in the time it took to set the charges. Ascalon drew the sanguinary guard more tightly around Sanguinius.
"Reinforcements are coming," he said.
"Indeed." Sanguinius scanned the tunnel openings, choosing the next path. He settled on a corridor on the opposite side of the chamber from where the Blood Angels had entered. It was as large as the passage they had left and had as many conduits. He saw now that not all of the pipes fed into the Nexus. Perhaps not even all those that did were bringing material to the junction. They might be carrying something away, too. There was another consideration. The roar of an approaching mass of the enemy was louder down that tunnel. If a larger force was coming, it might be from something worth defending. There was a score of melter bombs, keyed to a single detonator, placed on the Nexus when the company moved on. The junction was that big. The Blood Angels moved down the next tunnel, retreating from the blast they would unleash and advancing on the foe. Ralderon ordered Sergeant Fahil to hold the rear, trigger the detonator and note the results. The noise of the demons was deafening, though still subsumed to the song of the Manufactorum. But they were not yet in sight when Fahil set off the bombs.
"Detonation!" Fahil reported. "It looks like..."
The sound that cut him off was greater than the explosion. Sanguinius heard the deep-throated thunder of the blast. He pictured the Nexus shattering, the conduits flying back in shards as the energy they transported was unleashed when the melter bombs ruptured their integrity. That was the material explosion. It was barely audible beneath the other sound. That sound, the one that silenced Vahil and demons alike, was the sudden wail in the heart of the song. The symphony of the Manufactorum broke into a momentary cacophony. The words crumbled before they could finally be spoken. A mountain screamed. The dark miracle that fed the great gate above the planet stumbled in its operation. Even chaos could be disrupted. And it was now. The shriek of the music ended quickly. Junctions elsewhere took on more labour, and the work of destroying reality resumed. In the space of those few seconds, though, for the duration of the wail, Sanguinius felt the complex shudder like a stabbed animal. The pain went deep, much further than the immediate vicinity of the Nexus. After the shriek, the mournful insanity of the song resumed. From the rear came the rumble of collapsing stone and metal.
"The chamber is gone," said Vahil. "There's been a major collapse."
Sanguinius voxed the captains of the other companies.
"Our strategy is bearing fruit. Destroy the large junctions."
The desert scorpion of Baal was a juggernaut in its armour. A single spear could do nothing against it, but strike it with many and it would fall. Enough spears would kill the foundry too.
"We have our prey," Amit responded. "You will hear our blow very soon."
The tunnel split ahead, the equally large branches turning left and right. The left-hand path took a steep descent. The roaring of the demon horde came from there. Sanguinius chose it, wondering why there was still no sign of the foe. The Blood Angels had travelled 2 miles since the first blast. The volume of the howls was no longer increasing.
Lord Primarch, are they retreating? Ascalon asked.
It doesn't sound as if they are, does it? Said Sanguinius.
It was more likely an auditory distortion created by the web of tunnels. There was so much unnatural about the Manufactorum, a deceptive quality to the sound would hardly be surprising. Perhaps he had been wrong to think a demon army guarded this path. At least the conduits were as numerous as the first tunnel. Sooner or later there would be another junction. The terrible song hesitated again, and then again. Two other companies of Blood Angels had destroyed their first targets. Both times Sanguinius heard and felt the deep tremor shake the Manufactorum.
"We are damaging this terrible place," he voxed the Legion. "It knows us. Soon it will fear us, because it will know we have come to kill it."
But how many spears will it take, he wondered. For all that the Blood Angels had advanced quickly, they had barely broken the skin of the huge forge. There could be hundreds of miles between Sanguinius's current position and the core, if there was a core. The slope became steeper. The floor writhed. Sanguinius listened to the song more carefully, hoping to find that it was waning, a hint that the damage was starting to matter. He found something else instead. The whisper was emerging again, more distinctly than before, as if the wounded animal were desperate to cry out. The words would not be stopped. There were syllables now. They were so slow, long seconds passing between each consonant and vowel, that their refrain was hard to distinguish. At the next intersection, Sanguinius paused. He listened for the whisper now. It seemed more localized than the rest of the song. The full symphony did not change in volume depending on the route taken. It was the voice of the entire Manufactorum, and its voice was everywhere. The whisper was getting louder, and it was getting faster. It slipped out between the pores in the Manufactorum's intakes of breath with such sudden clarity that Sanguinius wondered how he could not have known it for what it was from the start. It was his name.
"Lord Primarch!"
Ascalon asked, as with a wounded snarl Sanguinius plunged down the left tunnel in pursuit of the voice.
"Can you hear it?"
asked Sanguinius.
"The song, my lord."
"No, the whisper."
Ascalon said nothing for a moment, listening.
"I hear no whisper."
"Ralderon,"
Sanguinius called,
"can you still hear the voices?"
"No, my lord."
"Then it is for my ears alone.
The enemy is preparing a more insidious attack." The thought came that the demonic power that held the Manufactorum might not be on the defensive at all. Sanguinius dismissed the pessimism. The wounds were real. The music had fractured. Sanguinius followed the hissing syllables of his name. It summoned him, and he answered. "I do not die here," he thought. "My end will come, but today I am the one who brings the end." Demons roared in the distance, always in the distance, always around the next bend, but never arriving. At last the corridor narrowed and made a sharp turn to the right. It ended in another Nexus chamber. In the chamber was a single abomination. It stood before the junction of conduits. It was kin to the one Sanguinius and the Herald had fought outside the Manufactorum. It was taller, its horns longer, but the muscle pink of its hide was the same. It carried a staff instead of a sword, and this it held at the vertical. Its other two hands held a book. Sanguinius did not know if it was the same tome or not. He didn't care. The demon appeared to want him to care. It held the book open. It held it forwards, arms extended, an invitation Sanguinius would decline. A nimbus of warp energy surrounded the demon. It dissipated as the Blood Angels came into view. As the energy vanished, the sounds of the demon army fell into silence. The illusion of the multitude evaporated.
"So this is our ambush," said Ascalon. "A single foe."
He sounded very suspicious. "Kano?" Sanguinius asked. He advanced slowly into the chamber. Several hundred yards separated him from the demon. He saw no other abominations lying in wait.
"I sense only the one we see," the librarian voxed.
Sanguinius hesitated. The demon was motionless. It did not attack. It held the book, and that was all. It had lured him here. It must know what he planned to do. It could not think it would be enough to stop the entire company. His choices were few. He had come to destroy the Nexus. That imperative had not changed. Sanguinius halted less than 50 feet into the chamber. He would not be part of the design being woven.
"Fire on the nerve cluster from this position," Sanguinius commanded. "Ignore the demon."
The sorcerous light returned, and a sudden nova burst from the book. It shot up and behind the demon, striking the Nexus.
"Back!"
Sanguinius ordered. The conduits disintegrated. Coruscating, murderous light burst from them. It formed a contained ball of energy, blinding in intensity, its convulsions scraping at the mind like claws. It fused tighter, drawing in on itself. It imploded, and now, where the junction had been, was a single point of warp light.
"Oh," Sanguinius thought.
And then the light came for him. The beam struck him in the eyes. There was a moment of absolute void, and then there was a maelstrom of creation, an uncontrolled explosion of being without form. He dropped down its eye, into dark. He fell through blackness, veined with red and green and blue and violet, the colours of ruin entwined and cutting into his mind like wire. He did not land, but he stopped falling. He floated in the black. The darkness became mist, gathered definition, and became the bridge of the vengeful spirit. He was there again, as present as he had been when he had slipped between realities on the red tier. And again, Horus struck him down. The pain again. The pain of final dissolution. He felt himself die, and he felt the grief at treachery and the grief of failure, the grief that his death was meaningless. There was no doubt now. He died, and Horus won, and that was all. He fell into the dark, and light pierced it again. It became shadows and then substance again, and once more Horus towered over him. Once more Horus slew him. The pain, the grief, the futility, it was all there again. And then again, and again, and again. He lived his final moment over and over. The pain never diminished. Each iteration of his doom was as excruciating as the last. He tried to turn his head as the vengeful spirit materialized. He was confronted with the same perspective. He groaned, and with a wrenching effort of will, he turned his back on Horus. He spun himself away from the vision, though he heard the sound of his boots against the deck. The effort was futile. He turned and turned and turned, and he died and he died and he died. There was no escape, no meaning, no hope. Each time Horus killed him, he saw a trace of the future that would come. Every death brought its consequences. None were repeated. All were terrible. Horus was endlessly triumphant. All that changed was his immediate route to power. Sanguinius spun faster, the movement no longer of his volition, and he saw endless iterations of his fate at once, as if he were in a mirror corridor, with the same image reflected to infinity. But this was more than an image. It was real. He died 1,000 times at once, and the pain was 1,000 times amplified. A new blackness rose. This one was his. It came from within. It was anger that dwarfed the pain. Its jaws were immense, jagged with fangs, breathing flame and hatred. It consumed him, and yet the jaws were his too. With them he would repay the treacherous galaxy with blood. He roared in an agony of wrath as the images of his death endlessly repeated. Darkness within lashed at the darkness without. Deep in his mind, buried in the agony, a sliver of his identity protested. It did not want this thing he had become. It rejected the black monster that claimed him as its father. His last piece of rationality reached out in desperation for any trace of hope. It flashed through the deaths upon deaths upon deaths, becoming weaker and dimmer as it looked for any meaning, any sign of doom leading to consequences other than eternal night for the Imperium. At last, the hope appeared. In the infinite variations of the battle against Horus, there was one that challenged predestined death. One vision was different. Only one. In it, Sanguinius dodged the death blow. Horus put so much power into it that he overbalanced when he missed. There was a fraction of a second of hesitation as he sought to correct his momentum. Sanguinius seized the chance and drove the blade and carmine up. It found the weakened point in Horus's gorget. It pierced his armour. It pierced his throat. It pierced his skull. This was the outcome Sanguinius had never even dreamed of, because the entire foundations of his destiny were built upon its denial. In this one vision, the terrible blackness withered, collapsed, and broke apart into whirling ash. Here, and only here, there was hope. Here, and only here, the Imperium did not fall. Here, and only here, the Emperor's dream lived on. Like the coils of a monstrous serpent, the continuum of dooms gathered around Sanguinius. They came to strangle the single hope. They came to destroy the thing that turned them from certainties into mere possibilities. The visions formed a knot around Sanguinius and the image of light. It tightened. The wrenching anger rose once more, fastening its grip on his being. When the knot closed, the light would be gone, and there would only be the fury. Sanguinius felt the imperative of decision. He made his choice. He refused the blackness and chose hope. He lunged towards the light. He raised his sword and plunged into the vision. He became the Sanguinius who slew Horus. The sword killed Horus, and it cut through his evil dream. It sliced through the knot. The visions fractured, mirrors broken into shards. They fell away into the void. Now Sanguinius was falling again, but he was not done with the sword. After driving the blade en carmine through Horus's skull and through the knot of fate, he brought it down. There was so much strength in the blow, it cut through unreality itself. The blade sank into the flesh of the dream void. It tore the warp fabric open with fire. Light appeared beneath Sanguinius as he fell. He was leaving the realm of visions, but had not yet returned to reality. He was in a nether zone, neither dream nor real, but linked to both states. The light was another knot, another nexus. It looked like the intersection of the Manufactorum conduits, only the conduits themselves were absent. It was the flow of warp energy and material mined from the interior of Piran, the unreal colliding with the solid to form the gate. Searing, impossible creation whirled through the convulsions of the nexus. It was the forge of the new reality of the galaxy. Sanguinius descended, wings outspread, to cleave the knot in two. He passed through the nexus. In his wake, creation ended. The energy screamed. The uncontrollable explosion spread through the void. A dome of conflagration unfurled above Sanguinius. Still he fell, still powered by the single sword blow. Another knot of energy appeared, and he cut it, and then the next, and the next, and the next. He had chosen to live, and so had torn destiny open, and with that rupture was slicing apart all the coils with which chaos sought to entangle him. He was dealing a death blow to a creature he barely understood, whose size he could not grasp, and yet had defeated. Down. Down, down, the great sword blow of hope, cutting through all the knots of ruin, a streak of red unleashing the flames of purification until he cut his way back to reality. The void peeled back. The light of deliverance engulfed him. It blinded him with the blood-red fire. He blinked, and the flare vanished. He stood in the chamber from which he had first fallen. The demon was at his feet. Its body was cut in two, as was its book and its staff. Weapons and corpse curled at the edges, dissolving from the materium. Violent light filled the chamber. A sea of liquid fire roiled across the ceiling. Currents of flame strove against each other. Maelstroms formed, melting everything above. Metal and stone dropped in blinding streams to the floor of the chamber. Everything was shaking, cracking, breaking apart.
Lord Sanguinius!
Ascalon was at his side, half reaching as if unsure whether or not the angel was an illusion. Sanguinius looked around, trying to get his bearings. He felt the solidity of the floor beneath his boots. The surface quaked, but did not flow away into dream. He looked at his sons. The Blood Angels were more or less as he had last seen them. More of the company had entered the chamber, but that was the only change in their disposition he could see. They were solid, unwavering in their reality.
"What happened?" he asked.
"You vanished," said Ascalon, alarmed.
On the Red Tier, he had fought visions, but they had been visions. He had not fallen into an elsewhere. The fusion of dreams and reality made him dizzy.
"How long was I gone?" "A few seconds. You and the demon."
It had felt like hours. A lifetime. As long as death. His Voxspeed vibrated, erupting with the reports and interrogatives of his captains and chapter masters. He listened to them now, putting together what had happened during his absence. He realized after a few moments that he was the author of the new situation in the Forge. What he had cut apart in that nether zone was now destroyed in reality. Tangles of conduits all over the Manufactorum had exploded, far more than had been targeted. The complex trembled. Its song was broken beyond repair. The Manufactorum screamed now. It howled a chorus of final pain and terror. Machines and power were tearing each other apart. In the hail of reports coming over the Vox, a fragment broke through. It was a single word.
"Brother!"
The rest was lost in static. But the voice was Gilliman's. The Blood Angels were no longer isolated from the other two legions. The tremors were growing more violent by the second. The Forge's scream rose higher, losing coherence, becoming a thunder of catastrophe.
"We have triumphed," Sanguinius voxed to the Legion. "The enemy's works fall before us."
At his nod, Ascalon ordered,
"All forces withdraw immediately."
Spear held high, he led the turn away from the chamber. The tunnel beyond roared. Liquid flame consumed its ceiling too. The conduits split, bleeding energy. Uncanny lightning forked across the width of the corridor. It burned glowing crevasses into the walls and floor. The Blood Angels raced to keep their victory. The mountainous forge was about to fall in on itself.
"We do not die here," Sanguinius thought. "My end is not yet."
And then he wondered,
"Are you sure?"
He wasn't, and the uncertainty elated him. When the Blood Angels entered the Manufactorum, they dropped into silence so complete they might have been swallowed by the grave. Demons abandoned the other Manufactoria to flood the land. Under the shadow of the demonic fortress, on a battlefield so long that the combatants at either end were over the horizon from each other, the Legion struggled against the abominations. The Lion led his legionaries to the regions before the closed doors of the Forge. The formations of Dark Angels were walls of black iron. The demons hurled themselves against the barriers. The Dark Angels refused to give up a single step of the land they held. Their heavy artillery bombarded the swarms of monsters, and the infantry advanced methodically, the walls of iron crushing the enemy. While the Warhawks of the Ninth Legion launched strafing runs against the Manufactoria, cutting into the hordes as they emerged from the gaping doorways, and Calibus led his iron hands against the demons emerging from the foundry closest to the primary Manufactorum, Gilliman struck from three centres. After being part of the vanguard in the initial run to the Great Forge, the destroyers turned back, driving a wedge through the centre of the mass of demons at the same time as Gilliman took Flame of Illyrium and the Invictus bodyguard in a stiletto jab through the body of demons besieging the Dark Angels. Towards the middle of the battlefield, and at the southern end, the greater body of the Ultramarines attacked in two radiating movements. Phalanxes cut into the enemy like so many swords. Gilliman forced the demons to contend with multiple fronts and kept them on the defensive. They sought to repel the invaders and take back the land. The Ultramarines had no positions to hold. All they needed to do was keep moving and destroy everything in their paths. The destroyers threw themselves into the fight with an enthusiasm that might have troubled Gilliman in a different context. When he monitored the communications between Hierax and his company, He heard tones verging on savage joy, yet the discipline of their attacks never wavered. What he heard was the brutal satisfaction of no longer fighting a defensive war. He understood. When he pumped the Arbitrator's double stream of bolter shells into the abominations, when the explosions vaporized warp flesh, he felt the same satisfaction. And when the destroyers pulverized the heaving mass of the enemy with rad artillery barrages, there was more satisfaction. The worst of weapons for the worst of foes. That logic was unassailable. Then use the weapons you have acquired. You know what the Athames can do to these beings. He brushed the thought aside. The daggers were in the vault aboard the Samothrace, beyond the reach of temptation. There was no need of them here. The weaponry of the Ultramarines was effective in destroying the abominations. Then Gorod, marching with Gilliman beside the flame of Illyrium, challenged his certainty.
"Chainswords and axes are felling these things more readily than bolters," he said.
"And we've seen this before," Gilliman answered. "But they are falling quickly enough.
I could almost wish we had brought even more primitive weapons."
Gilliman didn't answer. He punched the Gladius Incandor through the skull of a glistening pink monster, then finished it with two more stabs as it tried to divide itself. For more than 100 hours the battle raged. Then the Manufactorum cried out. A mountain chain of infernal creation screamed with a throat of stone. Fissures snaked up the heights of the walls. Chimneys 3 miles high wavered. Their bases crumbled, and they dropped like broken spines into the pyres of chaotic lightning. The fissures widened. Howling light burst from them. The warp lightning punched holes through the towering doors. The demons in the field moaned as one and abandoned the attack. Their reduced army melted away, flowing back into the secondary foundries. Soon the high towers on both sides of the battleground began to flash. Streaks of corrupted light shot upwards to the base of the fortress.
"They flee," the lion voxed.
Gilliman turned to the primary foundry's doors. They were still closed.
"Brother,"
he called to Sanguinius,
"can you hear me?"
There was no answer at first. It wasn't long, though, before one came. When a huge split appeared the entire height of the doors, Sanguinius's voice reached Gilliman.
"We are coming out, Rupute. We have done what we came to do."
"I can see that." The Manufactorum was a volcano, about to be blown apart by its internal forces.
"Can you clear the terrain for the stormburst to land?"
"That will not be a concern. They have quit the field. Focus your efforts on escaping the site of your triumph. Don't let it be your tomb, Sanguinius."
"It won't be."
Gilliman was struck by the ringing confidence in Sanguinius's voice. He had become used to hearing his brother's iron fatalism. Sanguinius sounded different now. For the first time since they had been reunited on Macragg, Gilliman heard the angel speak with real hope. The Manufactorum convulsed. A series of explosions mounted the pillar joining it to the keep's gate. They began as pinpricks on the umbilical length, then became a pulsing river of fire. A blast at the base of the fortress gate was larger than Pirron itself. The terrain before the Manufactorum shook with constant tremors. A widening web of fissures extended from the foundations. To the south, for as far as Gilliman could see, clouds of dust erupted as the ground cracked.
"Withdraw, brothers," Sanguinius voxed to Gilliman and the lion. "This battle is finished, and greater victories will come."
"You saw something in there, Sanguinius," said the lion.
He sounded almost accusatory.
"I did," said the angel. "I saw hope. We are not slaves to fate, brothers."
The end of the Manufactorum arrived as the combined fleets came over the horizon, putting them once more in the line of fire of the keep's guns. The surface of Pirron flared white. Coronas of warp energy whipped up the pillar, growing vaster with every slashing coil. Pirron imploded, vanishing in an instant. The tiny growth at the end of the pillar sucked into the climbing disintegration. Blasts the size of miniature suns rocked the pillar, and then the dissolution reached the gate itself. The gun emplacements on the gate fired briefly. They did not destroy their targets before destruction came for them. On the bridge of the Red Tier, Sanguinius watched the holocaust. Warp-infused flames, hundreds of thousands of miles high, consumed the gate. The structure lost coherence. It disintegrated. Shrapnel, as big as planets, spun away from the main body. Solid matter, millions of miles thick, became vortices, hurling streams of incandescent rubble into the void. The trailing edge of one stream hit the Dark Angel's cruiser, Claustro, turning the vessel to burning gas. The greatest vortex appeared in the middle of the gate. The eight-pointed star spiraled into fragments. The breach spread wider with ferocious speed. The colossal structure consumed itself like burning parchment, the edges peeling away from the center, ash that could smash a battleship to dust, billowing to the galactic east and west. The sides of the ruined gate glowed molten. Between them now was a passage millions of miles wide. The void, stained by the ruined storm, was visible on the other side. Engines powering up to maximum speed, the fleet began the long crossing between walls of infinite fire.